Welcome back. The podcast is back, the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. We wanted to make you wait an extra couple days because we wanted to make sure to give you the best analysis of Thursday night's preseason game against the Patriots, which we will, of course, do. I am Kevin Fishbane, your host. You can follow me on Twitter at KFishbane. Follow all of our Bears content at Bears_Insider on Twitter. Same handle, by the way, for our Snapchat, Bears_Insider. It was a little dormant this week. I wasn't ready to teach Hub how to Snapchat, but it will pick up this weekend, Saturday night. The Bears have a practice at Warren High School. We actually have our own Snapchat filter for any of you who are going to be out there, and then we'll be bringing you snaps from Hallis Hall during the week. Profootballweekly.com/Bears is where you're going to find all of our Bears content. And the Bears are home now after a week in New England. They had three practices with the Patriots and then, of course, the preseason game. And Chris Price, who covers the Patriots for WEEI, was there for all of it. And I wanted to have Chris on the show to get his view of the Bears as someone who covers a different team. And then, of course, to talk about a couple former Bears on the Patriots, Martellus Bennett and Shea McClellan. Chris Price, again, covers the Patriots for WEEI. You can follow him on Twitter at CPriceNFL. This is our interview. So, Chris, before we get into Bears-Patriots week and what you observed at practices and the game, I got to ask you, are you avoiding scissors? Are you staying away from the scissors this week?
I think the best question I heard after the game was, are we going to call it Scissorgate? Are we going to, my philosophy is we've had enough gates around Fox for over the last couple of years. So, it's a strange story that for, a couple of reasons doesn't pass the smell test. But hey, when you cover the Patriots, you really realize that anything is possible at any given moment.
Yeah, that was really, really something to see. I want to start and talk about the three sessions of practices. And you were there at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough to watch the Bears practice against the Patriots. And the first thing, I know your focus is obviously on New England, but seeing them go against another team for the second week in a row, was there something about the Bears, a position, a player, that maybe stood out to you that you didn't really maybe know about beforehand?
It's tough because you hear about a player, and I've had this experience too with people who come to visit the Patriots, and they don't really appreciate a guy from afar. I'll have to say this: I never really appreciated Alshon Jeffrey from afar until you get a chance to see him operate up close, in a full-on 2.5-hour practice, and you watch his ability to separate, you watch his ability to battle off the line, you watch his, you watch his hands, you watch his feet, all that. I came away incredibly impressed by what he's able to do, especially going up against Malcolm Butler on a fairly regular basis. Now, granted, Butler is not, Revis or Sherman or anything like that, but they had some great battles, the fight aside. I thought watching him was a real eye-opener, and it was really fascinating to see the work that he put in. The size, the strength, the speed, all of it. It was incredibly impressive from an outsider's perspective.
Yeah, and that's interesting too. And our fearless leader, Hub Arkish, was at those practices, and he commented on he said it was the best he's seen Alshon Jeffrey in a long time. And I think from an outsider's perspective, we have recency bias, and we think about Alshon Jeffrey from what he's been injured for so long the last year. You forget what he's able to do sort of on the field. The other big story that came out of especially the first two practices were these little scuffles, these dust-ups. And the Bears had a few of them in training camp, and you've covered enough training camps, Chris, where you have seen it happen before, certainly. But from your vantage point, what did you kind of take away from those? And I mean, I follow all you guys on Twitter. I didn't see a ton of stuff about Patriots fights when they were practicing on their own. I wasn't surprised the Bears were getting into it, but I was curious your kind of takeaway from seeing those things come up.
It wasn't a surprise to see the members of the Patriots who were involved. I'll say that. I also think, too, both days were really hot. That's the other thing to keep in mind here. Monday and Tuesday was really hot. It was 90-plus degrees. They were on the field for an extended stretch. You don't want to say a fight in that circumstance is inevitable, but when you have a guy like, and this is just through New England prism, when you have a guy like Brian Stork, who's been scuffling all summer, been on and off the field, all of a sudden locked in a position battle,
and he's struggling through a practice and it's hot and he's agitated and, you know, maybe there's some, you know, some talking going on back and forth, he's going to take a swing. And it's not, that aspect of it was surprising. Butler is the scrappiest competitor. I always say that he is literally, I mean, he every single snap for him, he plays it like it's his last, and, you know, like rent and food and his livelihood is on the line. And so to see him scrap with a guy like Jeffrey, that was not a surprise either. So I don't think it was a singular thing. My perspective was that it was, for whatever reason, it was the New England offense and the Chicago defense that seemed to, and the Butler-Jeffrey thing aside, that seemed to engender the most ill will. And when I say ill will, I'm kind of putting up my quote fingers here. It's not, you know, bitterness or anything, but there was a lot of talking going on between those two units. And it, again, this is just from a purely outsider's perspective. We've seen it happen with the Patriots before. Other teams will engage them in joint practices and use the Patriots as a measuring stick and say, look, you know, we want to be able to match up with these guys. And they feel good after a couple of plays. They make a couple of plays and they start talking and, you know, things kind of start rolling for them. And I think that was one of the reasons things kind of headed in that direction over those first 2 days.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, because I think the people that were there from Chicago kind of correlated some of those fights as a way to kind of help the Bears out after such a terrible start to their preseason. And then they played obviously a little better last night. So Martellus Bennett, let's talk about Marty Soros Rex. Before I get to the media aspect of Marty, I'm curious what you've thought about Martellus Bennett as a player, getting to see him up close.
He's been every bit as advertised as a player. I think the size, the strength, the speed, all of that. I think that when you consider pairing him with Rob Gronkowski in an offensive scheme, and if you have Edelman, Amendola, Deion Lewis, all of those disparate elements around him, I think that it's going to be incredibly intriguing. I will say this, that I'm fascinated to see how he is going to react as a player going into a contract year who is not going to be the number one or even the number two option in the passing game. And you guys know as well as I do, even better than us here in New England, that he does have a reputation of maybe being a little bit sour when things don't start to go his way. And so I wonder how much of that New England experience is going to rub off on him, and he's, you know, going to maybe change things a little bit, but who knows. But I think that from pure on-field perspective, I think he has a chance to have a real special year. I went back and looked at the most productive seasons for an offense when it comes to the tight end position. And the 2011 Patriots with Gronkowski and Hernandez are still kind of the standard bearers. You know, you look past that and it's the 83-84 Chargers with Kellen Winslow. But putting that group, thinking maybe somewhere in the range of 175 to 180 catches as a group, you know, not just obviously as an individual, but as a group, I don't think that's completely out of the question. So I think that based on what we've seen this spring and this summer from Bennett, I think that if he can remain healthy for all 16 games, that tight end position has a chance to be best this year.
I think that was the Martellus Bennett jet that just flew overhead hearing you talk about him as we joined by Christopher Price in the podcast. By the way, folks, give Chris a follow on Twitter at CPriceNFL. He wrote the Patriots preview to our Pro Football Weekly preview magazine. You'll see a little bit more of him on ProFootballWeekly.com. And sticking with Martellus, I mean, I think you nailed in the head in terms of how he is as a player and then his personality. Look, I've always described him as eccentric, and he certainly goes by the beat of his own drum. So with that in mind, how surprised were you, or were you surprised that he chose not to speak to the media at all this week, including after the game?
I was a little disappointed. I think that, and look, I'm not overly sour here when I say that, because he's done a phenomenal job when it comes to filling up notebooks this spring and summer. He's been great with us. He's been very open. He's been funny. We put together, you know, the last week of July, we already had, you know, the all-time best Martellus Bennett quotes in a New England Patriots uniform. So, you know, from that perspective, he's been great. But I think it would have been great to hear his perspective on facing his old team this week. I can kind of understand it because he knows he's going to get the Jay Cutler questions, and maybe he kind of wanted to walk back from that a little bit. But it was a little disappointing not to be able to hear from him this week. So we're going to see if that's going to be a pattern going forward, whether or not he's going to change his approach with the media. The next time we get in the locker room, I believe, is going to be Sunday. So maybe he talks, maybe he doesn't, who knows. But again, just you know, looking back on the past week, it would have been nice to hear from him, even just a little bit about the prospect of facing his old team.
Yeah, it's funny because before the trip, I was talking to someone with the Bears about whether or not he'd talk, and I think the everyone kind of assumed he would because he's a pretty outspoken guy. But the person I talked to said, not so fast, because he's so calculated that he knows that people want him to put on a show. He might just, sit back and relax. And I don't want to say it was, a rude thing for Martellus Bennett, but, certainly I wouldn't say he's not getting a kick out of knowing how frustrated the Chicago writers were that he didn't talk. And look, we talked to him once a week the last season, and you do see ebbs and flows with him. And a lot of it can be correlated to how he's doing on the field. And the first thing I thought of when he made the Jay Cutler comments was that was a Pro Bowl season for Martellus Bennett. So, but he's an interesting guy, and you're right. He will certainly fill up your notebooks. The other former Bear that we didn't get to talk to this week, and he didn't get to play, is Shea McClellan, and he certainly will not fill up any of your reporter notebooks, Chris, so don't expect that, but he's a very nice guy, and he's always been a hard worker, and I think there's a lot of Bears fans who are expecting him to put up huge numbers just because that would happen to Chicago. First-round pick, fails to live up to expectations. Bill Belichick picks him up, and he has a big year. So how are the Patriots, how do you see them using him in their defense this season?
In the spring and in the summer and the first preseason game when we saw him, they moved him around a little bit. And I know that he was able to do a few things in Chicago to varying degrees of success, obviously. But I think that, his versatility is going to be an important part of how much he plays here in New England, because they have a handful of guys at the linebacker position who could do a bunch of different things. Jamie Collins can line up in a few different spots. Dante Hightower can line up in a few spots. Obviously, Rob Ninkovich has that history as well. And so I think they're going to lean on that. He played inside. He played outside. I think he's going to kind of be an all-purpose type of guy defensively, and I don't think he's going to be, an all-pro or a pro bowler, but I think he's going to be a really good complementary piece to this defense, because you look around and they already have a lot of those elements in place. If they're healthy, Ninkovich, Sheard, Collins, Hightower, the defensive linemen, and, Malcolm Brown. I think that they're relatively well off when you're talking about front seven guys. But I think a guy like McClellan, again, this is just from what we've seen over the course of the spring and the summer, can do some things, can do some different things, and fill in and provide some depth where needed. I don't think he's going to be the kind of guy who's going to come in here and play, say, 90% of the snaps all season long. But I wouldn't be surprised to see him pop up in multiple spots in that front seven over the course of the 2016 season.
And I'll tell you this, Chris, if it's a Patriots-Packers Super Bowl, Aaron Rodgers is going to be afraid, because Shea McClellan broke his collarbone in 2013. That was his career highlight. So, the Patriots will have that going for them. Jimmy Garoppolo, obviously, to those of us in Chicago, there's the local angle from Rolling Meadows, Eastern Illinois. Did he take a nice step in the game on Thursday night with that two-minute drill at the end of the first half?
Well, first of all, I'll tell you too, and you can appreciate this, Jimmy Garoppolo is a horrible liar, because he said he liked, obviously he grew up as a Bears fan, but he also liked Brett Favre. So I know instantly that's impossible. Even as a New England guy, I know that that's wildly impossible. So let's get that out of the way first. Secondly, he did take a big step forward. I think that the template for Garoppolo over the first four games of the season is becoming really evident if you follow him over the preseason. You're not going to rely on him to throw for 400 yards and four touchdowns. And, if you get down by two touchdowns in the second half, that's not an ideal situation for any quarterback, really, but even more so for Garoppolo. What he's going to need to focus, and the team's going to need to focus on playing really good complementary football. That is to say, the defense needs to give them short fields. They can't give up any big plays on special teams, and special teams needs to do its part to tilt the field in their favor, and he needs to rely on the offensive difference makers around him. Now, obviously, over the course of this preseason, he hasn't had Gronkowski, Edelman, Amendola, Deion Lewis, all of those guys, but he's been able to develop a nice little rapport with Bennett. A.J. Derby had this, I believe, was six catches last night, looked very, very good. The youngster out of Arkansas, who's making a bid to be that third tight end, James White continues to show up. LeGarrette Blount continues to show up. I think that they need all of those elements, plus they need guys on defense that, you know, the Cyrus Jones had a pick inside Chicago territory last night. They were able to get two turnovers that led directly to scores in the preseason opener. That's the kind of thing that you need to see if you're the Patriots, because obviously with Garoppolo, the margin for error is far less than it is when you're talking about a guy like Brady. So, you know, we go back and we use this phrase time and again, but it's really, really true. Garoppolo needs to be a good game manager. The first two games, hasn't taken any sacks, hasn't thrown any interceptions, managed to put together some really nice, efficient little scoring drives. That's what you're going to need to see from him if the Patriots are going to be really successful over the course of the first four games.
Now, this question is going to get ahead of both of us, but I've already seen some Chicago writers, I expected this from fans, but some of the writers have already started talking about Jimmy Garoppolo's contract year coming up next year. And if he is going to be the future with New England, obviously Tom Brady is not retiring in the next year or two, and the Bears are going to need a quarterback of the future at some point. And so people are trying to connect the dots without getting into too many crazy hypotheticals where I can imagine Bears fans are already trying to order Garoppolo jerseys. What do you say? I mean, we've been through this, Chris, for so many years, and by we, I mean you, in terms of Patriots draft quarterback. Will he be the quarterback of the future, sits behind Brady for 3-4 years, moves on, and they get the next one? So how do you factor when you think about where Brady's at in his career, and I know it's impossible to predict when he's actually going to retire, and what you've seen from Jimmy Garoppolo, how can you maybe project that shaking out?
I think you need to see Garoppolo over the course of the first four games of the regular season to really offer a definitive answer on that. I think right now, you know, we see what we've seen in the preseason. We see him making, you know, making advancements, both in practice, joint practices, the preseason games. But there's no way of really knowing what kind of quarterback he's going to be unless you put him out there for those four games. And I think that audition is going to be everything. I think if he nails it and the Patriots are 3-1 and he, you know, throws 10 touchdowns and one pick and is efficient and is able to kind of guide the Patriots in the fashion that he should, I think that there's going to be a market out there for him. I think that, you know, if he fails, you know, for whatever metric, I think that market is going to dry up. So, you know, I think that, and this is just my gut, he's going to do relatively well. I don't know if he's going to do like, you know, Matt Castle 2008 kind of well, because I don't think anyone saw that coming, but I think he has the mindset. I think he has the poise. I think he has the makeup to be a successful quarterback at some point in his career. Maybe not this year, maybe not next year, but down the road, I think he's going to get it. He strikes me as the kind of guy who's going to understand how to be a successful quarterback in the long term. Now, if you can match up that with when Brady is going to retire, then you're going to have something here in New England. But that's the great unknown. You know, what's the end game for Brady? You'd like to assume, given his current contract, he's going to play another 2 years and then retire at the age of 41. But would Garoppolo hang around until then? You know, all of these scenarios, all these hypotheticals have yet to play out. But I think that, you know, the best answer I can give you right now is Garoppolo's four-game audition that's coming at the start of the year, I think is going to go a long way toward telling us his future as it relates to the Patriots and maybe the rest of the NFL.
Yeah, just a couple more here with Christopher Price, WEEI out there in Boston. I love the name of the blog. It is what it is, the Bill Belichick moniker, which I've found using a lot in my like normal social life, Chris, where someone will ask me like a personal question. I was like, hey, it is what it is. And the responses are very unkind. So I know what you guys have had to deal with. I'll say this, though, about Belichick, and this kind of transitions into a next question. We've had difficulties with John Fox here. He's very paranoid, and he doesn't like to talk in detail about players. And what's always been fascinating to me about Bill Belichick is, because I've gotten Bill's transcripts for years, I've watched a lot of his press conferences now, and you can do that by 10 times. He is paranoid. He's not going to unveil secrets, but he'll talk about players and he'll get really, and I was reading some of the stuff he said about the game last night and some of the stuff he said during the week. And it's interesting that he finds a way to balance that out. And it reminds me that John Fox can't say, well, I'm just doing what the greatest coach does, because we don't get that from him. So what's been your experience, at the risk of asking a vague question, covering Bill Belichick and this team for all these years, the way that he is?
In my experience, if you ask him a question, and look, first of all, start out with the understanding, look, everyone's going to have bad days, and there are days where you are dealing with him and you hit a point of diminishing returns and you just close up the notebook and say, look, he's not going to give us anything today. It's just it's a mood. It's, you know, something he got up on the wrong side of the bed. His, you know, the milk and the cereal was sour, whatever the case may be. you know, we all have those days. I understand that. For me, it's about doing your homework and it's about paying attention. You know as well as I do that there are a lot of lazy members of the media who will sit there and just throw out the talk about question. And his philosophy, I believe, is, you know, he has 24 hours in a day. He has to give a half an hour over to us, you know, and he doesn't suffer fools gladly. So if you're going to ask a question, make it a valuable question. You know, if you give him a well-reasoned, thought-out, intelligent question, chances are good you're going to get a good answer. If you just throw out a lazy question, you're going to get batted down and you're going to get a bad answer. The other thing is, the best time to talk to him, again, in my experience, is on a Friday, because that's when he says, look, at that point, the hay is in the barn, and he can get a little bit more expansive. We've heard untold numbers of stories about the greatness of Mark Bavaro and Dave Jennings and those, you know, those late 80s Giants teams. And he'll talk about left-footed punters, and he'll talk about, you know, what it was like to work with Ted Marchibroda, and he'll go on and on and on at great length about these great historical events that he was a part of over the course of his career. Those are the cases where he will get the most expansive. But ultimately, again, to come back to it, my experience is if you ask a good question, if you ask a thoughtful, intelligent question that shows you've been doing your homework, you will get a good answer. If you ask a lazy question, not so much.
Actually, I probably told you this story before, but I'll tell it to our listeners. In 2010, my first week at Pro Football Weekly, I pitched a story to my editor about Kevin Falk. And my editor says to me, well, hey, Bill Belichick's actually doing a conference call with reporters today. Why don't you jump on and ask him about Kevin Falk? And I'm thinking, what? Like, I don't know if I could handle that. So I wrote down the question. I'm on the call. I'm waiting. I'm hearing some of his answers. And it was a Friday. I remember it being a Friday. And I got my question in, and he gave a great answer. And it was the last question of the conference call. And I was, like, so happy that, like he obviously liked the question. And obviously, you know how much he loved Kevin Falk in the time there.
Oh, yeah.
But that was an intro to Bill Belichick for me.
He's also, yeah. Too, it's funny, too, Kevin, because I've asked bad questions before, and I've asked poorly worded questions. You know, there was an instance a couple of years ago where I was, you know, the importance of getting out to an early lead and playing well early on and setting the tone. And I forget the way I asked the question, but he kind of just said, well, yeah, the point is to score points all the time, right? And so you feel foolish, but in that moment you go, you know what? I would like another bite at the apple. And he would, you know, he kind of allows you to kind of come back around to that. So
yeah.
It's not easy. And you get the look, you get the death stare sometimes when you ask the question, and, you know, whether it's a question he doesn't want to ask, you know, earlier this summer, you know, someone asked a question about Garoppolo and he kind of gave the Jesus Christ. You know, you're going to get those from time to time, and just understand that it's not personal. But yeah, it can be eventually, it can be interesting when you're part of either a Belichick press conference or a conference call.
Right. Absolutely. All right. Last one for you, Chris. Put you on the spot a little bit back to the Bears from watching the game. Again, I know you're focused on the Patriots, but, you know, outside Alshon Jeffrey, were there any other guys on the Bears that kind of stood out to you the way they played against obviously a very accomplished Patriots team?
I think their running game early on, and I want to take it with a grain of salt because the Patriots didn't have Ninkovich, Alan Branch, and Jabal Sheard, you know, three members of what should be their front four or five. But the Bears running game early, I thought, really stood out to me. And I thought they were able to do a good job setting the tone. That really was the biggest thing for me. If you're a Patriots fan, you know, you look at that and you say, well, you know, I don't know about our chances early on. And again, you take it all with a grain of salt because, you know, these are preseason games and it's vanilla on both sides of the ball and all that. But I think that the Chicago running game to me stood out as one of those things that, you know, has a chance to be pretty good, you know, based on what we saw last night. And obviously, you know, they're going to be able to sling the ball all over the yard. You know, it's with Cutler being what he is, and, you know, I completely understand what he is, but, you know, Cutler, Jeffrey, they're going to put some points on the board. But the other thing that stood out to me last night was about their ability to run the ball early against a reasonable facsimile of the Patriots' number one defense.
Yeah, and that was big for them. They needed to do that, and certainly everyone can agree, Chris, it was a much better outing for the Bears at Gillette Stadium this time than when they went out there 2 years ago.
Yes, so. Yes. If you're a Chicago fan, there's a number of things that you could take away from a good week with the Patriots on both sides of the ball. But yeah, you feel pretty good about the Bears now as opposed to the last time you saw him here in 2014.
Absolutely. All right. Christopher Price covers the Patriots for WEEI. Check out his stuff at WEEI.com and follow him on Twitter at CPriceNFL. Chris, thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of the summer before the season begins and the era of Jimmy Garoppolo.
Sounds good, Kevin. Take care. We'll talk soon.
Big thank you again to Chris Price. Interesting to hear what he had to say about Alshon Jeffrey and the impressions he had of that Bears offense. But of course, it's always amazing to think about things in the Patriots sphere because it's just such a different way. You know, they talk about the Patriot way, which is kind of this moniker that's been used for a long time. But boy, is it something different out there in New England. Before we get into some more analysis of that preseason game, and I want to also talk about Kyle Fuller, we got to talk about Loot Crate. Loot Crate is our sponsor. If you head to lootcrate.com/Shaw, S-H-A-W, you can get $3 off your first crate. And what are in these crates, you ask? Well, you can get apparel, collectibles, and more from your favorite pop culture franchises. They're delivered to your door every month. You get a new t-shirt in every crate. There's some stuff for the kitchen, for the dining room, whatever. You get all of this for less than $20 a month. And even less when you use our promo code SHAW, S-H-A-W, $3 off your first crate. New crate is coming soon for the month of September, so stay tuned and go ahead and subscribe to that using our promo code SHAW, S-H-A-W. All right, John Sally, my associate producer, joins me now. And John, I forgot to mention this at the top of the show, but folks probably heard it during the interview. It's Chicago Aaron Water Show weekend. So there are jets flying over my apartment as we speak. So a nice extra sound effect, I think, to the podcast this week.
And you may need to call them in to kill the spider infestation in your apartment.
I did during our commercial breaks have to handle some spider killing, just one or two.
It sounded like 10 or 15. I mean,
well, you know, I live alone and I'm not, you know, I like to have other people kill spiders for me. You know, I gotta man up, gotta do it myself. But it's all taken care of, and we can get back to the podcast, John. We can get back to the real,
if you
real
insist.
Business. So when I look back to this week at the Patriots, I think the way the Bears came out on offense really showed what they gained from 3 days practicing against a perennial powerhouse in New England. And you factor that in with a sense of urgency after such a poor performance on offense against Denver. And I think the result was Jay Cutler looked like he was in rhythm. I thought he played very well. Jeremy Langford with some great runs showing off his vision and his speed and a heck of a juke on Devin McCourty in the open field. Alshon Jeffrey, a great catch. Tony Moyaki played well. I thought Charles Leno, left tackle, played really well on that first drive protecting Jay Cutler's blind side. So you have to be pleased with the first team offense. The defense, on the other hand, you know, it's just kind of hard to tell when you don't have the guys out there that you expect to have out there. The one thing, John, that stuck out to me, the middle of that defense, when Jimmy Garoppolo got going, he started picking apart the middle. And we're talking safeties and inside linebackers. Now, this was generally second-team players at some points, but this is an area that we got to watch because, you know, the inside linebackers we should be comfortable with, but it's that safety position where the Bears are going very young, and, you know, you wonder if teams are going to try to kind of really challenge those guys in center field.
So I think it adds to my theory on the Bears' defense this year, and it's not really my theory, but if I can veer into fantasy football world for a second, the Bears are sort of being looked at by that community as a funnel defense, as a team that is going to be great against the run. And I think with the upgraded personnel that they have, it is going to be a good run defense. But I think you're going to be able to throw on this team. And I think what we've seen in the first couple of preseason games, there's some evidence to that.
Yeah, and I think that's only going to increase now that they have a big issue at cornerback. So Kyle Fuller had a knee scope John Fox announced after the game on Thursday. It's week to week. All reports indicate that it's possible Kyle Fuller could be ready for week one. That's 3 weeks from Sunday. You know, that's still a stretch. I actually thought Kyle Fuller had been having a fine camp, and I still think physically and athletically speaking, he's the best corner they have outside Tracy Porter. But now what do you do? What do you do with that position? I would expect someone to be brought in, maybe not to start, but just to add some depth. Here's something that people might be surprised about. Bryce Callahan is, from what I can tell, the Bears believe Bryce Callahan is their next best corner on the outside. Everyone knows him as the nickel corner. But at times this summer, he's played on the outside. That's where he played at Rice. He's gotten a lot of practice there. They have a couple other guys that can play the nickel, Demontre Hurst, Sherrick McManus. The other guys they have on the outside, very inexperienced. You're talking Jacoby Glenn, one career NFL game. Devontae Busby has not played in an NFL game. DeAndre Hall, fourth-round rookie, who eventually will take that spot. But, John, when you break that all down, even when you include Callahan, who is an undrafted guy heading into his second season, there are huge, huge question marks the Bears got to answer at corner. And, oh, by the way, your first game is against DeAndre Hopkins and Will Fuller and a deep thrower in Brock Osweiler.
And, Kevin, going back to Kyle Fuller, given that we still haven't seen Pernell McPhee, who was supposed to be, if not all the way back, certainly off the PUP list by now, do you really believe that Kyle Fuller is going to be in uniform week one, week two, week three?
You know, it is crazy because the Pernell McPhee thing has been maybe the biggest mystery of the summer. I wasn't surprised when he was in the PUP list to start, but he just wasn't even around for a while. And, you know, now he's starting to slowly get back up. And it seems that the company line is, if they can hold him out for a while longer, he'll be that much fresher for the rest of the season.
See, but I don't know how much I believe that, though.
Yeah.
There's no track record between Pace and Fox that I have reason to believe that.
Yeah, and the Earth, look, these guys set themselves up for years of scrutiny and skepticism the way they handled the Kevin White thing last year.
Exactly.
And look, it was they would be the first to admit that they, you know, messed it up from a PR standpoint, but we are forced to kind of question every timetable, and John Fox doesn't like giving timetables. I get that, but yeah, you're right. We have no idea when Pernell McPhee will be back. We have no idea when Kyle Fuller will be back. So it's something to worry about with the defense. Now, the thing with McPhee, Will Young's had a great summer. I think he's maybe been the best player on defense all preseason. Lamar Houston's played well. We've seen flashes from Leonard Floyd. Sam Acho picking up where he picked up last preseason as a preseason star. So they have depth there. They don't have that luxury at cornerback. And it is curious that they haven't added a veteran yet. You know, they might. I expect them to add somebody at some point just to get another body. But it's going to be something worth watching as we see. I think here's what would be ideal for the Bears, John. Bryce Callahan stays healthy. Really takes to the outside corner role. You can move him inside and bring somebody else in when they're in the nickel. And DeAndre Hall, I feel like that is the guy, or Jacoby Glenn, one of those two guys just jumps up and has a great next week and plays great against the Chiefs. And then the Bears don't have to worry as much. They want one of these young guys to just grab that until Kyle Fuller gets back. And hey, what if DeAndre Hall grabs it and plays great? What do you do when Kyle Fuller's back? I mean, there's no guarantee Kyle Fuller, you know, could get his job back. There's a lot to consider here. But, I mean, the ultimate thing we all can agree on is the Bears don't have any depth at corner right now. And the guy they're relying on most, and Tracy Porter, has a pretty vast injury history. So I guess we just spent like 5 minutes, John, talking about the big negative and not really a ton of time talking about Jeremy Langford and the positives of the offense. But right now, your question mark's at cornerback.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you subscribe? I've heard Hub say this a couple of times, that Kyle Fuller should be safety. And so when he comes back, you know, if DeAndre Hall, and we have no idea if he's even capable of jumping up and grabbing this job in the next week or so, when he comes back, is he a safety? Do they think about that?
Yeah, I don't know about this team and switching guys' positions. It hasn't been a great track record of doing that.
That is fair.
you know, look, the guy's played corner for 2+ seasons now in the league. Do I think he has a skill set to be a good safety? I do. But, you know, I also think the guy would probably be good if he just continued to hone his skills in Vic Fangio's defense. He's got enough athleticism to do it. It's just unfortunate that he's taken now kind of a step backwards with this injury, and we're going to have to kind of continue to wait to see what he can do. By the way, on our website, profootballweekly.com/Bears, in the August 19th edition of Morning Bears, there are I kind of went down about 8 different guys that stood out to me watching that preseason game. And Pat Finley, friend of the program, pointed this out. The Bears have quite the preseason schedule, where they have 3 playoff teams, Denver, New England, and then Kansas City Chiefs next Saturday noon game. Very odd to have a noon preseason game at Soldier Field, where we'll learn a little bit more about this cornerback situation. Which reminds me, you guys should all subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Just search Pro Football Weekly Chicago. Give us a 5-star rating while you are at it. John, from what you gathered, from what you've seen about this team in the past week and their week in New England, did you have any big takeaways?
Well, first of all, Morning Bears is one of my favorite ways to start the day. I think that's an outstanding way to start your day with Bears coverage. But the big takeaway I have is Jeremy Langford appears to have locked his spot down and maybe taking over as a 3-down back. Am I crazy for thinking that Langford's going to stay on the field for 3 downs?
You're not, and it's funny because you know, folks that were kind of keeping up with the site this week know that we talked a lot about the running back situation. And I pointed out the running backs as a position to watch Thursday night. Not so much for Langford, but I want to see if other guys would step up. I thought Jordan Howard had some nice runs in the second half, but Langford was fantastic. And he is so clearly the number one back right now. And I think this is a change from what we kind of thought would happen after they drafted Howard and the way they like Kadeem Carey. But there's no doubt in my mind that he's the guy. Now, they're going to continue to go in waves. They're going to continue to use Jaquizz Rodgers at times. But they are perfectly fine right now with Jeremy Langford. And I think that was kind of the biggest development of the week and seeing what he did in the game against the Patriots, certainly. And the other kind of positive was that Kevin White and Alshon Jeffrey really impressed everyone that was there with what they did against pretty good New England defense. And just a reminder of kind of what those guys are capable of. Now you just got to get Eddie Royal back, got to get Zach Miller back. Offensive line played better. So, you know, it's funny, John, every week it's like different sides of the ball are kind of the question marks. You know, last week the offense was miserable, then the offense picks it up, and now we're worried about Kyle Fuller and the defense. But look, that is a team that's what you talk about when you have a rebuilding team that went 6-10 last year, 5-11 the year before. That doesn't have a ton of depth. It's very young. You're always going to have some of the stuff going on. So, you know, this game against the Chiefs is another opportunity for them to take that step forward and to make it fewer questions. But as long as guys getting hurt, we're still going to try to wonder, well, who's going to fill in for them, because this team just doesn't have a great depth.
And Kevin, I was just going to say, that description that you have for this Bears team, where one week some guys are good, another week other guys are good, and we've got different questions every week, that sounds very much like a 7-9 or 8-8 team.
Yeah, and they are what they are. I mean, I'm predicting 8-8 because that way, I don't know, it's like the most boring prediction you can have, and I'm perfectly comfortable with that. That's what this team looks like right now. And they're banking on a lot of things to go right, and these injuries are not going to help the cause. Let's go ahead and close up shop for this edition of our lovely podcast. Guys, I still am not watching Bachelor in Paradise. You're welcome.
Good.
I have not watched it. But I did start watching Last Chance U on Netflix.
I've heard good things.
Yeah, my dad recommended it. I watched the first episode. Very interested to keep going with that one. So that's kind of your TV update for the week. I'm a little behind in the night of, so hopefully we can catch up on the night of next week.
It's been so good.
On the program, yeah. So, but I guess I've just been watching so much Olympics. Actually, what's on in the background right now, U.S. women's water polo going for gold against Italy. I watch a lot of volleyball, and every time I watch volleyball, the United States loses a close match. So that's been frustrating, but I know that our listeners want to know what I'm watching on television.
Clear.
And I have cable now, so I can watch even more things.
The possibilities are endless for you.
They really are. It's what those Xfinity commercials keep telling me.
Watching cable and killing spiders.
That's the life.
That's the life of Kevin Fishbane.
with the Blue Angels flying overhead above my apartment. All right, guys, big thank yous, of course, to you two, Dan Mott and John Solly. Chris Price was our guest. Go follow him on Twitter at @CPriceNFL. Follow us on Snapchat. Go add us. Go to add user by username Bears_insider. And on Saturday night, Warren High School, if you're there, check out our filter when you use your Snapchat and follow along with us there all season long. Follow our stuff on Twitter at @Bears_insider and on the website profootballweekly.com/Bears. Thanks again, of course, to our sponsor, Loot Crate. We got some more fun Bears talk coming for you next week.